Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games.
Listen!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat. This is IGN's Nintendo Podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and today on Nintendo Voice Chat, we have another two-parter for you guys. It's very, very exciting. The first part, we're going to be running through the news. As usual, some main topics that we have, of course, are the new Champions Amiibo have been released, finally, so we're going to be checking them out. I know somebody who has all four of them. And then, of course, we're moving down to a Super Mario Brothers movie has officially been announced. It's apparently in the works. And then also, Rime, for those of you who have picked it up already, has gotten already a day one patch that fixed a lot of issues that reviewers were having during their review progress. And then for the second part of the show, we're going to be talking a lot about, basically all about Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. So if you're excited about Pokemon, definitely stick around for that. But first, before we get to all that stuff, I'd like to introduce my wonderful cast of amazing, amazing people here. Over right here to my right, I'm joined with Per Schneider. Welcome, Per.
Well, thank you, Philip.
Very nice to have you on the show today. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's been a crazy week, but you know, I'm looking forward to a nice little Thanksgiving break, and yeah. and also Zach's looking great today.
Hey,
really, really excited. Yeah.
Young George Lucas here.
You do look good. You look great,
thanks.
Zach.
Yeah. Lost a lot of years.
Can you lift that make that chair a little higher?
Just get a little taller here. Yeah.
Sorry, we derailed you, Philip.
No. And then right over here to my left, we are joined by none other than Brian Altano. Welcome,
hello,
Brian.
Ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
Very excited for the show today.
Especially because when the Pokemon conversation starts, I'm going to walk out because I don't know a lot to say about that. But wonderful people will come in and take my place.
Yes, absolutely. But first, let's talk about these amazing champions, Amiibo. I was only lucky enough to get my hands on one of them, Garouk, who I unfortunately did not. What is so funny?
Because you, that's not really Zach Ryan. That's Jonathan Dornbush.
Did I introduce? Oh, okay.
What's up, everybody?
Well, I apologize.
No, it's good.
I can be Zach. It's fine.
We totally fooled you. Like, you didn't notice the difference.
The Killers are cool in other music.
There's something just so buttery sweet about your voice pair that just, like, it just transcends.
It just works.
It's on you. Yes, I'm so sorry. Jonathan Dornbush, welcome to NGC.
Charmed, I'm sure. Maybe. Hey, how's it going?
Very good. Good to have you here
as well.
Good
to be here.
Let's dive back into the Champions Amiibo. Did any of you guys get a chance to pick any of these up yourselves?
Yeah, I have two sets. This is my work set.
You have two sets.
Well, I have to have a home set.
No, you.
Wait.
Hold on. I thought you took all your Amiibo from home into work because you couldn't keep them at home anymore. Now you have a home. You have a double set at home.
Guys, I have to admit, I've been bad.
No, I don't have the entire set twice.
Intervention.
I just like the ones that don't give you a one-time unlock. You have to scan these a lot of times before you get the masks. Right?
Yeah.
I may have another set at home.
Wow. See, so, I scanned Garouk, I want to say, 15 times. Because he's the only one that I was able to get myself. And I've got nothing but his, Stone Smasher sword out of that.
Right, so,
How long did it take you?
I haven't gotten the mask yet. No.
Oh, okay.
So I have, I have two of the sets. I have to check which ones they were. But I haven't gotten Garouk's yet.
I see.
Yeah, you're looking at me look, it's for the good of the people. I'm being nice by having them at work so people can use them.
Very generous.
Yeah,
sure.
Also have the Mario Amiibo sets, wedding guys.
Yeah, this is like someone says, I got cigarettes at home, but I bring a pack into work because, people need cigarettes there too.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't smoke, but can I have one?
Of course.
I don't collect Amiibo. Can I steal yours? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, man. Okay, but I think the designs of them are gorgeous.
They're great. Yeah.
They're some of the best looking Amiibo. They still have that weird issue with the clear plastic rod going up the butt of several of these characters. To be blunt, that's what's happening. Which is weird because that is a toy design issue that they worked around based on the original Smash Brothers line. The poses in those games were not... they're really dynamic and cool, but they didn't really lean themselves to being... smart toys. So what we saw in the first line of Smash Brothers toys was that they had weird stuff like Link's P-Rod and a bunch of other things. And so I thought that going forward, you would design the toy around its ability to stand on its own so that a child couldn't rip it off the base, which is ultimately the biggest fear I guess people have with Amiibo. But we're still running into the thing where they have the big rod. Her specifically, what's her name again?
Garouk?
Yeah, it's not... What's going on there is not great. You can't see it at home. You can Google a picture of her. It's really just going... She's standing there triumphantly, and then there's just a tower right in between the legs. So some of these are handled better than others. That said, the actual designs of the figures are stunning.
Yeah, these are so really, really detailed. Good.
I thought by now they would have taken the kind of cheesy way out. No, maybe not cheesy, smart way out, like Skylanders have, by putting some other objects in. Like the Pikmin, the late Pikmin Amiibo has that, where it has rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they would do more of that, but I guess Nintendo really likes that cleaner look of them freestanding on the pedestals.
I agree. They're cool. So you bought these in a 4-pack?
No, all singles.
These are all individuals? Yeah. Do they sell one big box of all four?
Not as far as I know of.
No,
I
didn't see one. Yeah.
Oh, man, that bumps me out. That would have been really cool.
But they are going for $40 each on Amazon.
Oh, really?
Well, awesome. If somebody had two sets, maybe that person could be rich tomorrow.
Maybe people keep buying two sets and that's why they keep selling out. Maybe
that's a good point.
I'll be honest. The Amiibo game. We spent a long time in the show talking about Amiibo. I kind of dipped out because I reached my limit, but I still pop in for some cool ones here and there. I think I'm going to buy the Shovel Knight ones.
The new ones come out.
I think Goron friend here is definitely the one to get.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome.
When these
he's
are back really, to being really normally priced, I will absolutely buy some of these.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely looking for. I already have all of the other Breath of the Wild Amiibo, but these are the last pieces of the set that I need to get. So hopefully I'll be able to get the other three. I have, what's his name? Gosh, that big guy with the stone smasher on the end.
Garouk, right?
Garouk?
Yeah.
David. Yeah, Garouk. That's the guy that I have, so. Yeah. Very excited. But on to more news. So you guys obviously heard about this, right? The new Super Mario Brothers movie that's currently in the works with Illumination Studios. And if you guys don't know, or I'm sorry, Illumination Entertainment, excuse me, that's the studio behind movies like Despicable Me, The Minions, Sing, and The Secret Life of Pets. So obviously this is going to be an animated movie because we don't know if John Leguizamo is attached just yet, but I don't think it's going to be a live action Super Mario Brothers movie. Although I thought he did a great job as Luigi. Personally.
He did. Yeah. You know, given the source material, I think he really shone.
Bob Hoskins is no longer alive.
That's true.
Unfortunately, he can't make his return. Yeah, but neither one of them I would have pegged as shoe-ins for either of the roles when they were chosen.
No, and Bob Hoskins had nothing but absolutely terrible things to say about working on that film.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a nightmare for him.
I feel like this will be a little bit of a different production.
I think so, too.
Obviously, by looking at the pedigree, you know the direction it's going to go into. I got to say, first reaction was, oh, good that it is a CG animated movie. I was happy about that. And then I was like, well, this is not my favorite studio to do it.
Yeah.
Like, so, I got to be honest, and maybe because the movies skew younger.
Sure.
And, like, I do feel Mario has that universal appeal and will appeal to our age group and the next generation even after me. And I wanted a studio that's a little more clever, and I feel like Illumination is very kind of sophomoric, very, like, kid, super kid friendly.
I think they definitely, their films tend to, it's less the Pixar divide of, like, it's for adults and kids. Like, there's that generational gap there, I think, more with their films. The Wall Street Journal report that initially revealed this didn't say like the tone or anything story-wise, so we don't know exactly what it will be like. My fear is the Goombas will be the minions of this movie sort of thing. Like, they will easily be the ones doing like Wabba Dabba and just like running
pineapple
around. Yes. Yeah. But I mean, they still do good work. Like, the original Despicable Me is still like a pretty good movie, even as someone who like doesn't love the minions. I think that movie still really works as an animated film. I think Sing was actually surprisingly decent. Like, they've made some decent movies.
Yeah. To be fair, none of these are bad, but like, in my book, they're all the kind of, it's the Seven Brigade for me, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
sure.
They're not as clever as what you would get out of some of the, you know, the Disney or the, some of the other Universal or, you know, obviously Pixar productions.
Yeah.
I would have loved like the Wreck-It Ralph team to tackle this one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty insane to imagine Pixar doing this. So to go a notch below that, although I would say Wreck-It Ralph is up there with some of the, I mean, I would say it's above probably the last three or four Pixar movies.
Yeah, like Total Tangent, but I think the Disney in-house animation right now is outperforming current Pixar.
Yep,
I agree. Even though Wreck-It Ralph isn't technically like a video game movie, I still think it's probably one of the better like video game movies out there.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Just because they nailed so many of those characters. Like, who was in there? Sonic was in there. They had some Street Fighter
Bowser's
characters.
Bowser,
yeah.
Mario's Mushroom is in there. Like, there's a bunch of Mario stuff in there, which is interesting.
And it's interesting what that'll mean. So say they're doing this deal with Illumination, say that becomes officially announced, this movie's in production, they agree to do two or three more movies. Does that mean we won't see any Nintendo things in Wreck-It Ralph 2, you know, things like that?
So.
Like, I feel like this sort of closes that door, but this is a specific part.
I think that the groundwork for Complications was laid in the Universal Studios partnership already, with the amusement park inclusion.
Yeah.
I think that makes it very difficult for, you know, either Nintendo working with Disney or Disney working with Nintendo, right?
Totally.
Like that connection.
So,
but never say never, right? Like, we brought up Bob Hoskins, and Roger Rabbit is the living, breathing example of, you know, an unlikely crossover of different studios that were bitter enemies for so many years.
Yeah, and I feel like the theme park announcement sort of set this precedent for Nintendo that's exciting. Like, this movie deal, when anything is officially announced, it's super exciting to me that Nintendo is finally starting to take risks with its material. Because if you look at interviews since the original Super Mario Brothers movie, that thing hangs over them like the worst ex relationship they've ever had. And like, even Reggie was talking about in interviews recently where they're like, hey, would you guys do a movie? He's like, well, you know how badly that movie went. But I finally, like, this is a good sign to me of like, the doors are going to slowly open and we're going to see more of these partnerships, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah, for sure. I think like the fact that this will connect to rides and probably toys and all the other stuff is really exciting. I don't know if it'll be directly in line with a new game or anything. That'd be
like an Odyssey, like he's actually traveling.
Yeah, sure, something, right? Like, I mean,
what if you get stuck in the real world?
I could honestly see them doing like even another mobile game for something like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of dedicating like full development to like a Switch game, I think a smaller scale thing, maybe even something on the 3DS, if that's still around by the time this movie comes
out. It will feel weird if there isn't like a direct tie-in game to this. But I mean, we have Odyssey right now, so who knows how that's going to sort of long tail.
Yep. Maybe they're so good with, they've had plenty of experience with the Minions. The Minions are essentially the Rabbids. What if they're just doing Mario plus Rabbids, the movie?
Pump the brakes.
Yeah, right, I'll leave.
let's get a Mario movie first.
I just want more Mario plus Rabbids.
I do too. Yes. I love that game. Yeah. I really love that game. I bought the DLC.
But speaking of Nintendo sort of being more open to building relationships and sort of letting their... They've always been very protective of their brand. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah.
But now it seems like they are starting to be a little bit more open about like letting other people sort of show off their content. And I'm talking particularly in the YouTube sphere because it was reported that Nintendo is considering a YouTube... like sort of live stream monetization type thing, or to sort of better build their relationship with YouTube. So we actually have a quote from Ryan Wyatt, who is the head of YouTube Gaming, and he went ahead and said that Nintendo is spending a lot of time looking at how to engage their creation community and how to handle monetization. YouTubers are able to live stream Nintendo content and monetize through our non-ad products. That's a better question served for them for what they want to do in the future, but I think there are better ways to improve and better optimize how they work with the creators. Now, for some of you guys who might not know, I actually come from a YouTube background. So
yeah, that's your planet.
And Nintendo YouTuber.
Yeah,
like, completely
Nintendo
on the nose.
YouTube background, yeah. So I used to be a Nintendo brand ambassador, and then that changed once I started working here. But I have like a lot of experience working with them, and you know, I as a Nintendo YouTuber, it was difficult at times to sort of like try and make a living off of this whole thing, off of like you know, putting out fresh Nintendo content that was monetizable. But at the same time, you know, I'm happy to see it was difficult for me to sort of create that aspect, but at the same time it was still worth it because having that strong relationship with Nintendo, they seem to like be helpful in other ways with their YouTubers.
Right. Well, you had a sort of way scenarios like, I want to make a video, but I also want to run a business that is, you know, self-owned.
Right.
And you have to sort of say to yourself, like, let me weigh exposure versus monetization. Because like, you can make a video that'll reach a ton of people, but it might get struck down by them, or you might not make a penny off of it.
Exactly. Because
it puts you in a weird spot.
Right. Because there are a lot of YouTubers out there who are in the sort of affiliate program or their brand ambassador program. And then there's a whole separate program that's a creator's program that essentially lets you monetize those videos. But Nintendo takes a gigantic cut, so to the point where it's almost not even worth it. It's like an 80% cut, essentially. So it's good to see. I'm happy to see that they're actually working on that. They're working on building that relationship with not just YouTube, but sort of people within the community who are excited about showing off their content, their games. I mean, we've all been saying that that's sort of like free marketing for them. So.
Yeah.
The challenge here is, if you are an established YouTuber and you start covering Nintendo or doing live streams, there are ways to monetize other than the ad product, right? Where it can still be lucrative. Like, let's say you're a YouTuber with 1 million subs, and you know, a company comes to you and says, "Oh, we want our water bottle featured on your programming," and they put it on there, they get paid directly. They don't have to pay Nintendo a cut.
Yeah,
but you can't ever get to that point unless you can actually pay for, like, you know, you got to start somewhere, and if you can't make any money off the channel, it's very difficult to ever get to that point of monetization.
It's very chicken and egg.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like I understand why Nintendo wants to limit the use of its products, but it's also kind of I think it still hurts them. It makes the Nintendo versions of products less attractive for streamers out there.
Well, we're seeing a lot of like kind of good guy Nintendo over the last few years. You know, them calling up third parties, them going region free with the Switch. There's a lot of like advancements they've made that have sort of been industry standards that they've kind of said to themselves, like, okay, you know, we'll be cool again. We'll play well with others. Mm-hmm. The YouTuber thing is interesting though, because there's two ideologies on creating YouTube content based on Nintendo stuff. And one is that the YouTuber is saying, like, you know,
I'm promoting your game. I'm giving you exposure. And Nintendo is saying, well, yeah, but that's our original content. That's our IP. You're making money off of our work. And those two ideologies kind of clash 50-50 in the middle. And I think you reach a point where there really isn't a right answer on it, right? Like when you're making a video about a Nintendo stuff, like, yeah, you're promoting their content. You're basically, you're probably putting a lot of people onto a game that they didn't know about. You know, they're advertising stuff for free. We do a good job on the show. You pat ourselves on the back and talk about indie games, right, that I think get missed a lot. But I think you get in a weird situation like that too, because in some ways Nintendo is sort of right. You know, like if you make an entire career off of Nintendo games, then maybe they should get a cut of that.
Are they not entitled? Yeah.
Are they not entitled? Yeah, exactly.
It's that weird, like, philosophical versus legal middle ground that, like, obviously YouTube and streaming has opened up so many more questions than existed 10 years ago. Yeah. And it's that weird thing of, I see both sides.
To me, there's a clear line. If you're utilizing footage from a game and it's like the attraction is looking at the game, then it's one thing, and it is a fine line, but like if it is about the personality and the commentary and or the transformation, like they take the footage and they're riffing on it, they're doing something that's ultimately good for the brand,
then I
feel like it's less clear that there should be a cut or even any involvement. But it's like, look, we can debate that forever. Legally, it's pretty clear. For the most part, there's the fair use angle, if it's part of news, blah blah blah, commentary, transformative, all that. But yeah, sure, it's not. It sticks out because it is not the path that most studios have taken.
Yeah.
Right. Most publishers don't do this.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if there will be more hooks built in to share content, because now you can share clips to Twitter and they're obviously very short and not monetizable. But like if they allow longer sharing, what will happen? This is going to be really fascinating to see.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think it's just, you know, even more signs of a new Nintendo coming, you know, and just a total transformation of how the company is sort of handling distribution of their media and stuff.
Digital rights. So
it's awesome. It's great.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It's gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Super Mario Odyssey, NBA 2K18, Fire Emblem Warriors, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day. So ask yourself, how many moons can you find in Super Mario Odyssey for 54 cents a day? Oh, and you don't even have to leave the house. The games come right to you. And hey, they rent movies too. Normally, a Gamefly trial lets you only check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/voicechat, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today at gamefly.com/voicechat.
There is some more exciting stuff happening. I guess Rime got a day one update. And I know that you've been playing a little bit of Rime, Brian, right?
Yeah, not to be confused with Rive, which also just launched. They are one letter apart, and they're both on Switch within a matter of days. Rime is really interesting. It was reviewed by Marty Sliva here at IGN. And he thought it was kind of like good, not great. It's probably more Shadow of the Colossus Eco than it is, say, Wind Waker. I think when we originally saw trailers for this game a long time ago, we thought, like, this is an indie Zelda game. And I think it has a lot of those tendencies, right? I'll say that, like, art-wise, it's really gorgeous. It's really minimalist, which I love. It's almost got this look like you're expecting textures to pop in, but they never really do. Very animated.
Well, like Wind Waker, like, you know, more kind of like animated. Yeah, animation style.
Yeah, and I'll say it's even probably a little bit more even than subdued than that, but I really dig exploring this world, even though a lot of the actions that you're doing are generally pretty simple. Some of my issues with it on the technical front seem to have been patched. I want to dig in some more and see how that works out. But reading an AMA from the devs that they did over at the official Switch Reddit, they basically said that porting to Switch is not easy and that bringing this game over is a kind of big, ambitious thing. You saw a little bit of frame rate dips right there. Some screen tearing, frame rate dips were kind of the issues that plagued it, at least from what I played so far, which happens on consoles as well. They didn't really want to take the vision of this game and lose it, right? Now, the Switch is underpowered. We all know that compared to next-gen consoles. So they were basically faced with three decisions. One, implement loading screens in between areas, which they thought was sort of jarring and not great. Two, shrink the world, which I think
completely impedes on the vision of the team. Mm-hmm. Or three, have the players sort of deal with some kind of flipbooky frame rate drops every now and then. Mm-hmm. I was noticing drops in like low, in like single digits at some points. Mm-hmm. Like actually before the patch, some of the worst I've ever seen. And I haven't really had a chance to dig in after the patch. From what I hear, it's better. But I'd be amazed if it's locked at 30 the entire time. But I want to poke around some more. It's a really interesting game. There's no UI. It's a little obtuse, but mm-hmm. just exploring and walking around and collecting stuff and figuring out the mystery of this game is cool. And it's nice that it's on a handheld.
Yep. It's heartening to know that they addressed it so quickly.
Yeah.
Which obviously with this new platform and everyone wanting to support the indies that come to it, especially the ports, it's good to see that they too want to support that.
Yeah.
As you were saying, like Marty who reviewed it, I think his main issue with it was that like, oh, it reminds you of Eco, it reminds you of Journey, it reminds you of X or Y game, but it doesn't do anything better necessarily than those games was I think his main worry, but you've been enjoying seeing this world.
Yeah. I think it's a cool place to be. You know, it gives me actually like sort of shades of something like Myst mm-hmm. to
yeah.
an extent
yeah.
where it doesn't exactly prompt you what to do. It's not nearly as talky, of course. I mean, yeah. most of the sounds you hear in this game are just kind of nonsense.
But it has that obscure, like you're trying to figure out like what's the meaning behind yeah. any of this kind of approach, right?
Yeah. And I dig it. It's charming, you yep. know, is the word I'll use.
Yeah, the game is receiving a lot of love, maybe not so much so from the review front on the Switch version, because a lot of the reviewers did get, like, you know, they were reviewing the game pre-patch, so yeah. it did have a lot of those, like, technical issues and stuff, and supposedly the patch did sort a lot of that out, but it's just unfortunate that a game like Rime that probably does deserve a little bit more attention on Switch than it's getting right now, did get hit with, like, these lower review scores. If the devs... I mean, I think that they honestly should have delayed it until December. It would have been a better time to release it. You know, that way it would have been ready with yeah. this patch.
Yeah.
Well, and they released it on like the craziest port week the Switch yes. has seen. It was this. It's LA Noire. It's Batman Telltale. It's Doom. It's now Skyrim is coming. It's like of all of these such major ports, like why not give your game a little room to breathe?
Just as sort of a bigger mm-hmm. conversation, I think that the last few weeks on Switch have been this sort of like cumbersome and fascinating look at how third parties interact with this yeah. with this thing. Looking at Switch sales for third party games over the last 6-7 months since the system launched has been so fascinating, because many third party studios are reporting that they're having stronger sales on Switch than other platforms combined. We saw stuff with like SteamWorld Dig. We saw a bunch of other smaller games, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, Ocean.
So none of these. This is a system that launched in March, away from the holiday season, which we are now squarely in, and I just find it perplexing that you turn on your Switch and there's 25 new games. There are a bunch of games on the list this week that I didn't even know existed until I just saw up here.
Yeah.
And they look interesting, but it's like they're fighting Skyrim and Doom, LA Noire, Rime, yeah. Rive.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing the weekly like Switch release story kind of every week for the last 6 or 7 weeks because it's so fascinating to track, where it's 19 games this week, 17 games this week, and it's like 15 of those games probably won't get a shot because Skyrim is there and yeah. Doom is there. And
yeah. Or just isolating just Super Mario.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. Super Mario Odyssey launched within a 7-day window in each direction of Sonic Forces, Super Lucky's Tale, and a reboot of Bubsy. Like, all those guys could have waited a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hang back. This yeah. is not yeah. your week to be a 3D platformer or a 2D platformer. Well, just like lay low for a little bit.
And talking about how well those sales have been doing for these third parties, I'm fascinated to see what, like, these past few weeks, like, how did Batman sell for Telltale relative to other.
Right. Because I think platforms. That's another one that just sort of got quietly yeah. thrown out so, there. Whereas Super Mario Odyssey was the best selling game of last month, yeah. despite launching on the 27th and only having 4 days in the MPD. Yeah. So it's kind of nuts to me.
I was going to say, I mean, there was no doubt that Mario's in-house franchises would sell on the device, and then, you know, obviously some of the indies at a lower price point are doing really, really well, mm-hmm. even if they're in some cases, even though they're later ports in some yep. cases, in some cases they debut there and are doing well. I think now the big question for me is, like, as we see games like Skyrim, LA Noire, Doom all come out, and some of them are, you know, half a decade old, not yeah. even yeah. just like 2 years old, but like really old. This is where I'm really curious. They're coming out at full price, like yeah. $60. Will they perform as well? Or was it more about that kind of price point that made those other games so attractive on the Switch?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I noticed Skyrim, the pre-order of Skyrim was the fifth best-selling game on the eShop.
It was up
It's not
there.
Out yet. And Doom was in the top two or three, right?
Doom was number three when yeah. I looked last time. So mm-hmm. I think the answer is they're probably doing really well. The question is, you know, will this continue or is this like the honeymoon, you know?
Yeah, looking right now, the top five are Odyssey, Rocket League, Stardew Valley, Doom, and Skyrim. And Sonic Forces is six. So basically one first party game and five third party games.
Stardew has been there every week, man.
I know.
Really well.
It's probably doing well for them.
These guys are happy they got that out.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I reviewed Skyrim, and I think by the time this airs, Skyrim will be out. So, and obviously the embargo's up anyway, because the review is out and hopefully you've watched it. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they're selling it at a full price right now, and it's going for $60, I believe. And it's, I say in my review that it's somewhere in between sort of the special edition of what we got on PS4, Xbox, and PC, and then the original, like, release that was on consoles and PC.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I was wondering where this one would land in the sort of, like, Skyrim timeline.
Yeah.
In between.
Yeah, it's like somewhere in between, because it has some of those graphical enhancements that we all really, like, enjoyed about the special edition, but at the same time, it doesn't have things like mod support, which does kind of suck. But at the same time, you're playing it on the Switch, which is a portable console, so, like, I personally, I'm okay with that sort of sacrifice, if that is a sacrifice. But it's great. It's an incredible experience playing that on Switch, because that game 6 years ago was the biggest, most massive RPG in existence. You know,
yeah, I think it's still our most popular wiki ever.
Grand Theft Auto, probably.
Really?
Yeah, Skyrim is up there, yeah. GTA 5 is a monster.
Interesting. Yeah, so Skyrim was there for a very, very, very long time.
It's a game that people play for a long time, and that has so many little things that you want to look up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, watching Skyrim, like, it is obviously an older game, and you can see it with, like, the facial animations and stuff. And, like, the lighting is very kind of flat in a lot of ways. But the port fared better than, like, a Rocket League or Doom, right? Like, some of the games that were created for this generation of consoles. So I actually think it looks competently done overall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Philip, how is the sort of novelty of playing it on a handheld? Like,
I like it. I don't think it's a novelty, really. I don't look at it that way. I think it's a really cool experience getting to have that game and pick it up and play it wherever you want, whenever you want, essentially. Yep. Like, it does provide that awesome pick up and play experience that you don't get out of a lot of Switch games, or just a lot of games in general. So I think they did an incredible job porting it over. It runs at 30 frames per second. Graphically, it looks awesome, whether you're playing it on the big screen or the small screen. The only real issue that I had with it is that it's just an older game coming to Switch. It's like 6 years old at this point, so the combat feels a little clunky. The motion controls, like the Switch exclusive features that are in the game, are fun, but like the melee combat is, I'm just gonna say it sucks.
It's, motion control stuff?
Yeah, like, well, not all the motion control stuff, but the melee combat
stuff.
Well, sucks.
It's an RPG, right? Where the game system calculates your impact rather than like a Zelda game where it feels like an action adventure.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, if you're watching the IGN video version of this, and you see the footage, like whenever you're in like close up situations with characters, it doesn't look good. But man, it's like the atmosphere is so awesome when you're stepping out into the world and the whole world is open and you see all this stuff happening, or it's sunset or night. Like, there are some moments of real beauty in this world, and like just the freedom of being able to explore and witness that this world continues to live. I mean, that's what Skyrim did before Breath of the Wild,
right? Yeah.
And like, and it did it in a way where characters could kill each other in a town, even, right? And like, a character could be missing from the quest. It's just really cool. Really cool game.
But another game that I guess all of us here have been playing, and a lot of us in the office as well, is Battle Chef Brigade.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Game is so rad.
Yeah.
I like it so much.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Jonathan?
So it's this.
How do you explain that?
You just basically mix five genres into a delicious meal.
Stew.
Yeah. Now you got a stew going. So it's basically you are an up-and-coming chef who wants to compete in the Battle Chef Brigade and become one of the world's top chefs. But as you're competing, it's this weird mix of you go out and hunt the monsters that become the meal you cook. So you go out, you hunt, you fight with magic and physical attacks, and then you go back to the cooking, and the cooking is a sort of like match three puzzle game.
Yeah, with a limited field.
Yes.
But you select what what you drop into it based on the ingredients you gather.
Yeah,
right?
So they have different elements. So some are fire, some are earth, some are water, and different challenges will be like, I want you to have majority water in this one. So you have to go out and be aware of what you're collecting and use the correct ingredients. Sometimes you have a pot that only allows you to mix fire elements, but that'll give you a boost. Like, there are all these little bits and pieces to that match three puzzle game that really enhance it. And it's also just, the world is so charming and upbeat. Like, I love it's this very pleasant sort of anime style, like the acting and stuff very much is like, I feel like I'm sort of in the middle of an anime, but everyone is so positive in this world and they just want to, they love cooking and that comes through.
And it really has nods to like Iron Chef, like, yes, you know, in the words of our uncle, like the, in the words of my uncle, right? Like, it's not Ali Cuisine. They have their own version of it. I forget what it was. Whenever you cook off.
Vive la Brigade, right?
Like, they obviously, they acknowledge Iron Chef.
Yes.
They acknowledge RPGs.
Yep.
And then even, like, I thought what was clever in this game is when you go out and you gather your ingredients, and you can start a puzzle in some case, in you know, a lot of cases, and then cook a little bit, do match three, and go, oh, I need some more ingredients. You run out and you get more. And when you get ingredients, for example, you'll see a bird fly around and you can like kill the bird and take what's left over as your ingredients.
Yeah.
Or you can wait and maybe another bird will eat the ingredients and then poop out an egg. And then now you have an egg, right? So you have to observe these like silly kind of chains of the ingredient monsters and plants and really kind of pay attention to what comes out.
Yeah, there are really smart, like deeper mechanics underneath it all. And they also train you in really smart ways because you're essentially in a town where everyone's competing, but you can do sort of little side jobs. And one is like looking at the puzzles, the match three, as if it's different puzzles. One is figuring out correct ingredients to use, like so on and so forth. And so they teach you new abilities and new sort of tips and tricks as you go along. It's a really smart rolling out of those ideas.
I think you brought up the kind of like the comparison to Golf Story. Golf Story takes like established genres, mixes them together, and you get something very different. Golf Story is a very relaxing game. Mm-hmm. This one's pretty frantic.
Yeah.
Like once you start cooking, you're like, you know?
Yeah, this is a little bit more intense than Golf Story. Golf Story, you can like sort of play at your own pace, I feel like, whereas this one literally puts a timer on you sometimes. So you are constantly racing the clock, but it doesn't get too stressful because you're obviously having a lot of fun while you're doing it. So I just love the way that they blended those genres together. I'm not the biggest puzzle game fan out there, but I do love fighting games, and I do love RPGs. And put all three of those together, and it's like a whole another genre that I didn't even know existed, that probably didn't even exist before this, but I'm in love with it, and I'm totally going to finish that game. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the quality of the kind of the visuals, it's very simple. Like, cutscenes sometimes aren't even animated.
Yeah.
It's just text-based. There's voice acting. But it's, you know, like, I got over that hump and then found it to be very, very charming, very clever. Good sense of humor.
Definitely. Totally. Yeah.
Cool. So another game that a lot of us have been playing in the office as well is Rocket League on Switch. I know that you guys out there are probably very excited, just as excited as we were to actually get it, which is amazing. Now, it's pretty much the same type of game, or it's the same Rocket League that's available on other platforms. Mm-hmm. It's actually got crossplay as well with Xbox and PC. Mm-hmm. I personally turned that off, and I found that
I should have done that.
If you turn off crossplay, you'll probably do a lot better because there's a lot of other people playing on Switch
who have been playing for a long time. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. Yeah, so I highly recommend that. Did you guys get a chance to check out any?
Yeah, Rocket? Yeah. So I played two player split screen with my son. It was running well. It does lack that kind of luster and sheen of the other versions.
Yep.
You know, I'm used to the PlayStation 4 version. And, you know, everything has this kind of like a lot of lights and glassy look to it. Whereas this one is kind of like, I don't know, how do you describe it? It's like San Francisco Rush in high def more.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's very flat looking on the Switch.
It's a little duller, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, you do see Jaggies in this version. Like it seems to use, you brought this up, it used like dynamic resolution switches to keep the frame rate running. Same studio that ported Doom, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah? Panic Button.
Yeah, and so that seems to be their go-to trick. So it isn't as pretty, but it's just such a fun game, man. Once you get good at, you know, the jumps and the flips and being able to control the ball, it's incredible fun, especially as a you know, at home game playing against friends or with friends.
It's interesting because when you use like the screen cap button in this game, and you go looking at your stills, it doesn't look like a good looking game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you actually stop and nothing is moving, like you can kind of see how they made it work.
Yeah.
But when everything is going, it's actually incredibly impressive looking for the Switch. I found that like that's such an interesting thing. And I noticed that with some racing games here and there, right? Where like the trick is to not stop moving. Cause the second you do, you sort of go like, oh, like, you know, the guys in Forza don't look very good in the stands or the blades of grass are kind of fake, but when everything's going, it's very good. The note about shutting off crossplay, very smart, because I got my butt whooped in this game. Just destroyed.
Yeah.
Destroyed. And it was like, this is my first few rounds. It's been a long time since I played this game. Did not go well for me. I did not have a fun time. But I'm going back. I'm getting better. And you can play against bots, which is cool. I played with the Mario car and the Luigi car, and you can add little effects to the back of them, like the stars and stuff like that. Yeah. And I dig it. There's so much in there. And the progression system's actually pretty smart. There's a lot of like little decals and cars you can unlock, and just a whole showroom and everything.
So. Yeah, Psyonix has been really great at like supporting that game continuously with free updates, and like most of the paid stuff, it's all just cosmetic stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they continue to add new modes and new arenas and everything, and it's cool to have all of that on the Switch. Yeah, it definitely doesn't look as great, but what matters about that game is that it runs well.
Yeah.
Like, that game could look like a polygonal, like, SNES game, and as long as it ran correctly, that's all that really matters for this game.
Yeah,
and I love it that it does run.
I would totally play that, too.
Yes, you know, I kind of would.
Exactly. It's... I don't know. It's just so much fun. Like, you'll go like, all right, I'll play a match, and then before you know, you play a whole season. Then you keep going, and like even you know, my son and I just played against the AI, and that is just so much fun. Like to do an entire season against the computer. It's a great game.
Yeah.
I really, really good game.
Yeah, I really like the way Panic Button ports their games. Like, they totally keep the core experience of that game. Like, that is totally Rocket League, you know, and when they ported Doom, that's totally Doom on Switch. Yeah, sure, the resolution takes a little bit of a hit, but I'm so much happier playing, like, having that same feeling, having that exact experience that I would be on, you know, playing it on a different platform.
Feels right. I'm in the same exact boat. I'm like halfway through Doom right now, and I just switched over to Rocket League for a couple of rounds, and it's like, it's kind of amazing how they pull that off, you know? Yeah. I really like the idea of those things sort of just being demade just enough to work. With Doom, I found I put motion blur on low and I turned off chromatic aberration, which I don't know what it is, but it sounds bad. So shut it off. No, it's actually pretty good for some games, but for Doom, I shut it off and I found the experience just like looked a little better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So,
Are you red? Are you colorblind?
No, but that's an option too, right?
Just checking.
I think that is an option. Yeah.
Yeah. You can play colorblind mode.
Yeah, like chromatic aberration.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
All right, game. Yeah, that's the end of our first, the first part of our two-parter today. So stay tuned for some awesome info on Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon coming right up.
Here we go!
Welcome back to Nintendo Voice Chat. This is part two. This is going to be the Pokemon section of the episode today. And today we're joined with, and I swear, Pear and Brian did not turn into these two lovely ladies. But we are joined with, directly to my left, we have Casey DeFritas, who's actually in charge of our review for Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. That's right. And over to my far left, we have Miranda Sanchez, who is an avid Pokemon fan.
I love Pikachu. Hey, I'm back. NBC. You know who I'm talking to. Anyway, I don't, anytime me and Casey are on, it's just like, oh, the Pokemon girls. It's like, yes.
Well, good news. I, too, have seen a Pikachu. So
we actually recently learned a very alarming thing about Pikachu in the recent movie. We can't talk about this. Okay, guys.
Yeah,
it might be
spoilers.
I can't handle it. It's also spoilers, but I can't handle it.
No, I mean, I think it's appropriate to bring up a little bit of the Pokemon movie. I mean, is it spoilery, though?
Spoilers for the next, like, 2 minutes, then, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. Come back in 2 minutes.
I'll wait.
We'll get all the spoilers.
Yeah.
All right.
Starting now. All right. In the new Pokemon I Choose You movie, at the very end, Ash, bring it to yours, is dying.
Classic.
And hallucinates Pikachu talking to him.
Ooh.
And it's really bad.
But what does he sound like? He does not sound like Keith David doing Pikachu.
It sounds like someone...
Danny DeVito?
Terribly, no, it sounds like someone terribly trying to imitate Pikachu, but saying words instead of Pikachu.
Ooh.
I'm not going to imitate it. You can try, Jonathan.
Oh, no. Give me... I need to be having a few more different drinks than this coffee here.
Okay, I think spoilers are over. And also the horrific part is over, so my Pikachu can listen again.
Okay.
For the ears. Don't listen. It's okay. No, just saying that... You know, spoilers mildly again, that Ash might die or whatever. I've been rewatching the original first season, and it's weird how often their lives are in danger.
Yeah.
There's like three frequently. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, Team Rocket kind of dies, or, like, they pull up, they're like, oh, no, they're dead. I guess we'll give them, like, a proper burial at sea. And they just start pushing them off the raft.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's so intense, and I mean, completely forgot about that.
Like, it makes sense, though, in a world filled with giant creatures that can shoot fire and lightning, that you might be more at risk of death.
Yeah, definitely.
You're allowed to take those wherever you want.
On your belt.
I think Pokemon's just getting a little bit more edgy, you know, as schools. We go. It's getting a little darker.
I don't.
Death is always present.
So, I'm gonna.
It's good though.
I don't know. I think Black and White got really edgy, and it's been getting less edgy since then. They actually try to make Team Rocket cool in Black and White, and then they're just like, never mind. Like halfway through, and they became goofy again.
Yeah.
So you're in charge of the review, Casey, right, for Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. And I know that it's coming out this Friday, which will be the day that this episode airs. So a lot of our listeners out there are interested in it. And so I'd like to hear some of your thoughts. I know that your review is up for it right now on IGN. Yes. So definitely check out Casey's review. And the video is going up as well. So
yeah, both will be up on Friday.
Correct. Yeah. But I would just love to hear some of your thoughts on Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon and sort of what makes this different than last year's release of just Moon, Sun and Moon.
So. Yeah. So first of all, disclaimer, I did review Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon based on its own merits and not based on how different it is from Sun and Moon. And because of that, it's still a really good game. Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon were, Sun and Moon were really good. Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon just add on to what Sun and Moon was. So they added on 100 more Pokemon that you could catch and also added on new features, like you can surf, you can go into ultra space, into ultra wormholes, and find legendary Pokemon and a ton of other Pokemon that aren't native to Alola. And there's also the battle agency in the Festival Plaza, and the story is also slightly different. So there's a lot of little things that add up to make it a much better, fuller experience than Sun and Moon were. And a lot of people are asking me, like, oh, well, if I played Sun and Moon for 100 hours, like, should I get Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon? And one of the cool things is that the exclusive Pokemon in Sun are also the exclusive Pokemon in Ultra Sun. So if you get Ultra Moon and started with Sun, you can then fill up your Pokedex. So if you only got one version in the first go around, you can get the Ultra version and still complete both Pokedexes.
Yeah, it's just like, now that I'm an adult, I like to buy both versions of my Pokemon because I have money for once. And so, that's kind of what I was really excited about, because this is such a, not like massive expansion, but enough of an expansion that warrants buying that second version where you may not have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As someone who only played 5 or 6 hours of Sun because life got in the way, life finds a way, should I... should I play through both at this point, or should I just jump to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon?
I would say just jump to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Like I said, it's pretty much the same. Like, you start in the same town, you have the same starter Pokemon, you will fight the same trials, but some of the trials are a little bit better. And
better clothes, too.
Yeah, better clothes, more hairstyles, more places to explore, and the world overall is just more lifelike and interesting. I know Pikachu. For example, like, you can go up to Pikachu or one of the many other Pokemon that you'll find in the overworld and interact with them. And the little emotes will pop up and they'll be really happy and, like, imitate you. And that's just a cute thing to do. You don't get anything from it, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And one of the NPCs I talked to was lamenting about how he had applied to 2 different resorts on the island and got hired at the one that he's now bellhopping for, but was denied a job at the other one. And he's like, oh, the other one's better. Like, I'm feeling really sad that I'm working here.
Aww.
And I went and talked to his manager, and he's like, oh, he's not feeling too good. Show him a Magmar. I was like, huh. So I actively, as soon as I got a Magmar, I didn't know what would happen. I was like, I need to see what happens to this NPC when he sees a Magmar. And I went back and I showed him the Magmar, and he's like, wow, thanks so much for showing me that. It looks just like my mom. And I was like, wow. And he's like, yeah, it reminds me of my mom, who said I should be the best bellhop no matter what, wherever I am. So I'm going to be the best bellhop ever. Thanks for reminding me of my mom, who looks like a Magmar. What? And it's.
I have so many questions.
Yes, yes. He's like, yeah. He says, thank you.
Plus, sure. Like, reminds me of like, oh, maybe they had a Magmar growing up in the family.
No, yeah.
Like, no,
his mom looks like Magmar.
Was his mom like a redhead? Is that the?
They don't. They don't show you the mom.
Okay.
I don't think I want to see his mom.
Okay.
But what if his mom is a Magmar? That opens up a lot of possibilities.
It is. It is. Magmar is a human-like Pokemon. Anyway.
Cool, cool.
There are cool little stories that NPCs tell you that were not there in Sun and Moon at all. And it just...
Yeah, there are like very few of those, which is something I've enjoyed in past iterations of Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Just like getting to know the residents of these towns. And they just feel very lived in. And based on what you review, because of course I haven't had a chance to play it yet, which I'm so excited when I download it. It just feels obviously way more robust and... I know I keep going back to it, but like having now just rewatched the first season of Pokemon, it makes me want to have that sort of experience where everything is lived in and there's just more interaction. And having that experience with Pokemon Ultra Sun is going to be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, so like before it came out, I wasn't sure whether this was going to be like a major sequel sort of scenario or if it's like a Emerald or a Yellow or one of those. Is it more along those lines or is it more like Black and White 2?
Definitely more like a Platinum and Emerald. Based on the marketing, I actually expected it to be more different, more akin to Black and White 2.
That's what I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, so that was kind of strange to go into it and have it be so similar.
Yeah, I was kind of curious why they didn't just make it one game as opposed to both the Sun and Moon.
That too, and I think one of the reasons, maybe
the star that everything was stars numbered, but I know that was a different thing.
Or money. Okay. Or also
well
money.
And also I do like that the exclusive Pokemon are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Whereas if they had made just one version, some of those Pokemon would have been left out. And the only way to finish your Pokedex if you were playing by yourself would be to play both Sun and Moon and Ultra. So technically now you only have to get two copies to fill out your Pokedex. But actually no, because there's there's the new mechanic in the Ultra Wormhole. You can catch legendary Pokemon, and there are some legendary Pokemon that are only catchable when you have two version exclusives. So, for example, to catch Rayquaza, you're going to need Latios and Latias, which are exclusive to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and have them both in your party at the same time to be able to find a Rayquaza.
So that wormhole, you were explaining it to me a little bit yesterday, I believe. Yeah, it sounds awesome. It sounds like... I mean, can you actually jump in there anytime you want and look for legendary Pokemon, essentially? So this is like the best way to essentially catch legendary Pokemon in the game now,
right? Yeah, they've never done this before where you could, every single legendary Pokemon, if it has been catchable in a previous game, is available in the Ultra Wormhole. So bar the mythical Pokemon like Mew and Magearna, which are only event Pokemon, you can find anything. You can find Zapdos, you can find Suicune, you can find Azelf, Cresselia, like from any of the generations, you can find them in this wormhole.
And the wormhole looks pretty cool too. Like I think I saw a trailer earlier today. It just was like a neat thing to explore.
Yeah, you ride on Lunala or Solgaleo through a hole.
A wormhole, maybe.
Yeah, one of those. And it looks really interesting, and you have to collect energy power-ups to keep moving and avoid obstacles. And the further you go, the rarer the holes that you'll encounter. And when you go into one of these warp holes, it like spits you out like 4,000 light years away. And sometimes a legendary Pokemon is there, and sometimes it's a regular Pokemon. And another really cool thing about this mechanic is that the Pokemon that you find are higher chance of being shiny. And once you're in that pocket dimension, that is already determined whether it will be shiny or not. So you could save right before talking to the Pokemon. And if it's shiny, you can keep resetting your game until you get a shiny Pokemon with the correct nature and the correct IVs. So
it almost sounds like you've done that.
Perhaps. I've highly considered it. But so you can actually check its IVs in the summary, but you can see its nature. So and now with bottle caps and gold bottle caps, it doesn't matter so much if its IVs are perfect, because you can always fix that after the fact.
Right.
So that's really cool. So there's actually a legal way to get shiny Pokemon besides breeding and hoping it happens.
It's also just better. That just feels better to me. Like I hate I get what Breeding's really good and it's smart for being competitive, mm-hmm. but I hate doing. I'm just like, oh, this one's not right.
Yeah,
get out of here.
Yeah. I have boxes and boxes and boxes of Gible and Alolan Vulpix that will never be used and Porygon. And they're just like, I don't want to release you because I feel bad, but you're also taking up a lot of space.
They're just trapped like, in a computer.
Yeah, forever.
I'll take one. I'll take one off your plate, please. If you, you guys want any Breejax.
Oh, man.
I know a lot of people are looking forward to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. I am. I'm mm-hmm. probably going to play a good bit of it. I don't know if I'll actually get to finish it. I did finish Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, though. But I'm super excited about an actual core Pokemon game coming to this thing.
Yes.
One day. I'm sure like many of you guys are out there. And hopefully we'll get that very soon. But
I have thoughts.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode today. Jonathan and I, and I'm sure you ladies have some stuff to get to very soon. We both have hard outs. So, where can people follow you at, Miranda?
You find me at Havoc Grows on Twitter, and that's Havoc with a K, and also pretty much anywhere else. I use a handle for pretty much everything.
Cool. Awesome. And
you can find me at ShinyKCD, like Shiny Pokemon on Twitter. And same thing on Instagram and pretty much everything else.
You've definitely reset your game a bunch, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really shouldn't. I need to do other things for the wiki, which I am also working on. But sometimes you just got to spend 3 hours resetting in front of a Pokemon.
You don't need sleep. It's fine.
No. It's overrated.
Absolutely.
And Jonathan, where can people find you at?
I'm at JM Dornbush as well on Twitter, Instagram, all over the place. Friendster.
All right, well, that's our show for this week. Thank you guys very much for watching. This is called Nintendo Voice Chat, if you didn't already know. We are an IGN's Nintendo show, but we are not IGN's only show, so definitely make sure you check out Podcast Beyond and Unlocked and all the other great shows, Game Scoop, on the channel as well. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Leave us a kind iTunes review. If you so please, we do appreciate those. And also, if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, definitely subscribe. And have a great day. Thank you.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.